ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to take a closer look at how we're preparing the next generation of teachers for our state school systems. With one of the largest schools of education in Wisconsin, UW-Milwaukee prepares an enormous number of teachers, school principals, and other administrative leaders each year. And as we continue to celebrate UWM's 60th anniversary, our focus today is on the UWM School of Education. Joining us in the studio is the school's dean, Alan Shoho. Welcome, Alan. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Tom.
Alan, like any large urban area, Milwaukee has a lot of great strengths, but also some serious challenges. And as we know, one of those challenges is getting the most out of our school system. Absolutely essential you have the right people in the classroom today, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely, Tom. You know, I think one of our challenges right now is that we have are having more difficulty attracting people into education. But once we do have them into education, you know, I think our job is to work with school districts to help ensure that they're as successful as possible.
And you mentioned the challenge of getting people into education. Things changed, what, about 8 years ago, was it, when Act 10 came along?
Yes. I wasn't here at that time, but what I've heard is Act 10 had a fairly substantial impact on the education profession. And I think ever since then, the enrollments, I think not only at UWM, but at most institutions in not only Wisconsin, but in the Midwest have been dropping since that time. And, you know, I think there was a public policy forum, a report that came out about a year ago that showed that most institutions are around 30% down in their schools of education in Wisconsin. And that number is actually larger in some of our Midwest neighbors like Minnesota, Michigan, and Illinois.
You know, it's really alarming that we're having fewer people gravitate towards becoming teachers or principals, because today the need for education, having an educated public, educated workforce, has never been greater.
Oh, absolutely, Tom. It's actually occurring probably at the worst time that we can think of right now, because right now many of the baby boomers are starting to retire. And now the pipeline is not as filled as it used to be. When I meet with superintendents, one of the things that they share with me is that 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, when they had a position, they may have 100, 120 candidates to choose from. Now they have about 20. So the numbers have severely dwindled during the time frame.
So the challenge for you as the dean of a school of education is, there are many challenges there, but one of the biggest is making sure that you get more of those prospective teachers to consider walking into your school and begin thinking of whether a career in teaching or education is the right one for them. How do you do that?
Well, you know, I think, Tom, what we're having to have serious discussions over the time I've been here is really looking outside the traditional pipelines that we have had, where students come to us. Now we're looking at things like we're going out to them, looking at second career opportunities for people. As you know, I'm one of those second career people, as well as looking at different pipelines where in the past, I would say we were fairly passive in our recruiting in the sense that we waited for them to come to us. Now we're going out to them and, you know, we're trying to develop some partnerships with some of our urban partners like MPS and Brown Deer to actually grow your own programs, as well as some other initiatives that are, I would say, non-traditional for schools of education.
We're going to come back and talk about your own background in a little bit, because it really is quite a story on how you ended up in education and now as dean of one of the largest schools of education here in the Midwest. But first, I want to come back to what you just said about growing your own. there is a lot of interest on the part of school systems to not only produce great students, but have them boomerang back in and be at the front of the class instead of sitting in one of those seats. That's pretty surprising, isn't it? We never had quite that same approach, at least in recent history.
Yeah. And, you know, we're actually, as I meet with our alumni, in fact, I've met so many alumni that actually fit that profile. And I think we've done, many school districts may have done that unconsciously. But I think if they actually look back, many of their teachers probably did come from their school districts at one point in time. The best story that I can share with you is we have a recent alum named Nate Deans, who's a teacher at Riverside University High School. The great thing about Nate is that he graduated from Riverside University High School about, I think, 8 or 9 years ago. And he's come full circle, and now he's an English teacher there. And what's really great about this story is that Nate is a young African-American man, and many times when we interviewed him, one of the things that many of his students said shared with him was the fact that he's the first African-American male teacher that they've ever had. And, you know, Nate has, I think he embraces that responsibility, and he's being a great role model for them.
The role model is so critical when you think about how you might get someone to consider becoming a teacher.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think if you ask any successful person, when I meet with many people in the community, one of the questions I often ask them is, do you remember the teacher or teachers who made a difference in your life? And I guarantee you, I haven't had the experience yet where everyone is able to identify that one or few more teachers. And it doesn't matter if they're 25 or if they're 85. In fact, what's really neat is when you talk to the 85-year-olds ones, and if you imagine, they haven't seen that teacher probably for 75 years, yet they still remember the name of that person and the impact that they have.
So we talked earlier at the beginning of the program of how Act 10 with the changes in benefits, and that really is largely the hook that was set back then when the traditional method of getting into a teacher program and then just progressing and essentially being rewarded for seniority, that began to change. So if you don't have that same golden cup at the end of the rainbow, saying, you know, here's where you'll end up if you just stick with it, you've got to use other techniques to attract students in. What are those techniques?
Well, you know, I would say, from my experience and even personal experience, compensation is not the answer, although it is a piece of the answer. You know, I think that must be something that has to be addressed. But, you know, if you ask most teachers why do they leave the profession, compensation generally is not in the top three or four issues that why they leave. Most of the times they'll identify the lack of administrative support. They will identify the bureaucracy and the amount of paperwork that they have to deal with. They'll talk about even the environment that they have to work with, some being very difficult. So those tend to be more influential than actual compensation. Although I will say this, you know, I think it becomes very difficult when you're a teacher and you're basically trying to live not so much, not too far above the poverty line in some cases. You know, we have teachers who are doing great jobs out there in the school system, yet, you know, they barely can afford to make it on their own.
And yet, for really good teachers, there are rewards in the new system. It is possible to go ahead and be incentivized to stick with it and make a career out of it if you're really good.
Yeah, I mean, there are some, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword because the new system allows basically school districts to, in essence, bid for teachers. And, you know, it's become kind of a free agent system. Now, the downside to that system is that, you know, you have winners and losers. And, you know, the school districts that can afford to lure people away with larger compensation packages, obviously, it may be good for the free agent. But I think for the overall system, it actually is probably detrimental because then it's basically the haves have more and the have-nots have less.
And so part of your challenge is approaching that high school junior, high school senior who's thinking of college, thinks that they'd like to not only continue their education, but perhaps become a person who spends their life educating others. That's clearly a prospect pool that you're going after. What message do you put in front of that high school senior?
Yeah. In fact, it's not only, it's actually earlier. We're actually trying to dip even further, sometimes in the freshman and sophomore year. And in some cases, I believe we probably need to start planting the seed in middle school. And, you know, I think that as far as attracting these young men, men and women into the field, it's really about connecting their passion and trying to make a difference. And I've met so many of our alumni who are doing just that. They're not doing it for the money. They're doing it because they want to improve the community. And I could name one after another about those who are trying to do their best here in Milwaukee. And, you know, I think they're having an impact. Now our job is to build capacity and so that and build a system that allows them to be successful.
You also talked a little earlier about how you're focusing some of your recruitment efforts on career changers, people who may have been businesswomen, businessmen. They may have worked, in engineering, which leads me to your story.
Yeah.
Because you weren't trained as a teacher originally. You were one of those STEM guys off in the business world.
Yes, I was. I was an electrical engineer, worked for actually Rockwell International, although the Rockwell that I worked for was in California, not here. And, you know, I think for me, it was all about finding my passion. And while I enjoyed parts of being an engineer, the part that I didn't really enjoy was that, you know, I helped design nuclear missiles. And, you know, it's when you are helping design nuclear missiles that basically you're hoping they will never fire, because if they ever fire, we don't want to talk about the results of that. And so, you know, I always had great teachers, and they were influential in me, and I wanted to be a part of that. And so I made the decision to follow my own passion. And, you know, I'm very supportive. I'm very fortunate that I had parents who were very supportive in that. And, you know, my dad told me, you know, you have to follow your own passion and make your own way in life and not just follow the way that he did because he was an electrical engineer.
Yeah. Was that hard for your family at all to realize that that career track that you were on suddenly stopped and you moved in another direction?
No, I don't think it was difficult for them. I will say this, it was surprising for me in their reaction. I was terrified when I was about to approach my father because, you know, I had come from a lineage of electrical engineers. But, you know, again, I think one of the things I learned from that is never underestimate the power of your family and what they're willing to do to support you. And, you know, my father was very supportive in that, and he's been my biggest fan ever since then.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Joining us in the studio is Alan Shoho. Alan is the dean of the School of Education at UWM, educates prepares more educators than just about any other school or college here in the state of Wisconsin, one of the bigger programs in the Midwest. This is part of our 60th anniversary series of programs we're doing throughout this year as we celebrate 60 years at UWM, and this week the focus is on the School of Education. Ellen, as we think about those career changers, I'm sure that we have perhaps more than one, maybe many, sitting out there listening to us on WUWM, who also may be at a point in their career where they've said, you know, I've done this, I've enjoyed it, but I'm ready for something different. What would you tell those folks mid-career who are thinking, gee, maybe I could teach? How in the world do they take that first step? Because it could be pretty terrifying to be stepping out of the car that you've been driving in for a long time into one that you may not know where the shift is.
Well, Tom, I say, first of all, I would tell them, if you really want to make a difference in helping improve a community, there's no better way than to be a teacher. As far as first steps, I would say certainly feel free to contact me. You know, my contact information is on our website, and I'd be happy to receive any contacts and then direct them to the appropriate person at UWM, or I would say contact whatever institution that they want to, but take that step. And I believe if you go into schools like I do and see the difference that you can make, it's something that's going to really tug at your heart.
You know, a lot of people who are successful in their careers have already spent 4 or maybe 6 years getting ready to do what they've been doing for a chunk of their life. How much more education typically is required in order to transition from someone who's been successful in one of those careers like engineering or healthcare or business?
Well, if they're assuming that they have a bachelor's degree in another area, obviously, like engineering or math or science or English, you know, I think more than likely they would be interested in pursuing our post-baccalaureate program that could get them their teacher certification. And it would probably take about a year or so, a year to two, and then they could do that quite easily.
And are we talking online programs, any of these offered online, or is it a combination of online and in-person?
Most of it would probably be in-person, because I think in our program, we really try to stress that, you know, education is a people business, and there are certain things that you can't do online. But I think there are some courses that are offered online, but I would say a majority of it is in person, because I think we like to give that person, you know, the opportunities, the face-to-face opportunities that you oftentimes can't really, I think, appreciate online.
Well, you also have an opportunity to be next to other people like you who are making that change. That also could be very powerful in terms of motivating people to make the change and stay with it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I've always been a big fan of cohort models, that where you're able to progress through a program with a group of colleagues, because of the fact, like you said, the support that you're given, and the fact that, you know, you're along colleagues who are in a similar boat as you.
How about when these career changers end up in a school system? Are they received by other teachers well, teachers who may have always been in education and may not have been working in the business world?
You know, I really can't tell you. I can share with you my experience because I was one of those. You know, I was well received at the high school that I went to teach at. But, you know, maybe I can't tell you for sure, because you know, I was in a math and science field, so, you know, math and science teachers are highly desired, and so it was very easy for me to transition. I wouldn't be able to know the answer to that for other teachers, so who may be in other areas.
No formal surveys, but you yourself personally have had a good experience with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about technology and how technology has shaped or changed the way in which you're preparing the teacher for tomorrow.
Well, you know, I think technology, what's interesting, I think technology is where it's helping shape the way we prepare teachers, but it's also helping change the way we prepare teachers, in the sense that, you know, many of the kids that we have, you know, younger, anywhere from 18 to 25 year olds, these young kids are actually coming to us very high-tech oriented. They know how to do things that, be honest with you, some of my faculty don't, because they weren't raised that way.
So you become the students.
Oh, yeah. So we learn a lot of things. In fact, I learned things from some of our students that work with technology. I mean, they're able to do things on their phone that I can only just really gaze at and just can't imagine. But, you know, I think that's one of the interesting things, that I think it's actually a two-way process that we learn from each other.
And so everybody can bring something different to that equation.
Absolutely.
What about having these career changers in some of the classes where you've got that 19 or 20 or 21-year-old? What are the dynamics like in the classroom when you have this mixture of different backgrounds?
Well, I think they learn from each other. And I would hope that they gain a sense of appreciation of what each brings to the table. You know, I think people who are a little more mature bring something else than someone who's an 18, 19, 20-year-old. to the table. I'd like to think that for the more mature person, you know, they see the energy of the what this young person able to bring. At the same time, I hope that the young person sees from the mature person, you know, some of the skill sets that they have and what they bring.
And as you think about that combination of young and maybe middle-aged or even older students in the classroom, it must present some interesting challenges for your faculty members. They're not teaching people who are all the same flavor.
Absolutely. You know, we have a very heterogeneous student population. You know, we have people who are upwards of 40, 50 years old, and, you know, we have the traditional 18, 19, 20-year-old in our programs. And so, you know, it does lend some challenges, but at the same time, I think our faculty are very adept at meeting those challenges because they understand that the learning styles that everyone brings, that people bring from different learning styles based on, you know, not only their age, generation, but where they, what, how they grew up, and I believe our faculty does a great job of addressing those, meeting those needs.
Now, when a student, young or old, leaves UWM School of Education and gets into the classroom, that's where the rubber meets the road. You know, you've after 4 years, maybe 5 years of theory and discussing how things should operate, you suddenly are confronted with a classroom of 15 or 20 or perhaps sometimes many, many more young K through 12 kids who are looking at you saying, okay, let's go. What do you got for me? How do you prepare teachers to deal with the social environment that they're going to be in?
Well, I think one of the misnomers that occurs is that, you know, at least in our program, our students get out in the field quite early on in their programs, and they have a lot of exposure into the, whether it's through field experiences and student teaching and observations. So they're out there in the field. It's not like the first time that they get out there is when they go actually get a job and teach. So most of them, my sense is most of them feel quite comfortable once they do get into that area. In fact, I'd say what I've heard is, you know, one of our strengths of our teachers is that they're able to meet the needs of an urban environment, you know, that they're very adept at being able to teach from a culturally relevant and pedagogical manner to identify with the kids that they're teaching.
As you think about the content of the subject matter, the material that is being covered by the teachers, whether it's in the K through 8 or high school area, I'm always struck with how challenging it must be for people like you to have that right combination of training. You know, how much of the time when you're learning how to become a teacher is spent focused on the subject matter, whether it's math or English, versus how to communicate the way to learn math or science or languages. How do you find that balance?
Well, it's not an easy process, to be honest with you. I mean, there is a fine line there between having a lot of practical experience at the same time, while at the same time also having the content knowledge to be able to transmit that. You know, I think we do our best there. We have some well-known programs in both math, science, our English program, of where our content area in particular, and we're focusing on more the secondary areas, are doing outstanding jobs. And, you know, I see many of our former alums, young alums, win Teacher of the Year awards in Wisconsin or Early Career Awards. And so it makes me very proud of what we're able to do.
So as we look at the next 5 years, a very, very critical time, especially in the city of Milwaukee, as you work on trying to improve the graduation rate, are you optimistic? Do you think that that we're headed in the right direction?
Yeah, I oftentimes use the word, two words, cautiously optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic about the direction of the city. As you know, I work quite closely with MPS on a number of issues, including our MCUBE initiative, I work a lot at Bradley Tech, and I'm, like I said, I'm very cautiously optimistic that we're moving in the right direction. Is progress as fast as we'd like it to be? Probably not. But, you know, I think I've always learned that when you try to move something that's difficult, it usually takes two or three times longer than you hope it would take. But if you're persistent and you will eventually get there.
You mentioned the M-Cube. That is the program that Chancellor Mone, UWM Chancellor Mark Mone, and MPS and MATC leadership have embarked on. A lot of potential there to see how you could connect the dots between those three large organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's a great initiative. It's still in its infancy, but it's an initiative that I think I'm surprised it hasn't been undertaken across the country in a number of environments, because the initiative is about creating a seamless transition between K-12 and higher education. And I think what we're doing is through the initiative is we're trying to align our curriculums together, align our systems together, because what we do know is that where kids tend to fall down is when they have to make these overly traumatic transitions, whether it's from elementary to middle school to high school to college. That's where they tend to have difficulties in transitioning. And so if there's anything that we can do to minimize and make that transition much more seamless, I think it's an effort that is certainly worthy. And, you know, I fully expect that M-Cube's promise will probably be, you know, it's still too early, but I'm hopeful that it'll occur over the next 2 to 3 years.
And the beauty with that program is you're not only creating new ways of teaching students, but also new ways of preparing the teachers.
Absolutely. And, you know, the School of Education is going to be integral in the M-Cube process. We have a number of faculty who are becoming involved in the M-Cube, and so I'm very hopeful of it.
And parents. Parents also have a role in participating with the teachers.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, you can't forget the parents, because the parents are actually, they are the foremost teacher that a child has.
We should find a place in the School of Ed for every one of us, right?
Absolutely.
We could all probably benefit by some of those classes.
Absolutely.
Well, Ellen, thank you so much for taking time today to share the story of the School of Education. Best of luck as you move forward, both with M-Cubed and all the other initiatives, to make sure we have enough good teachers in the school system, not just tomorrow, but for many years to come.
Thank you, Tom.
Ellen Shoho, the Dean of UWM School of Education and Professor of Administrative Leadership at UWM, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Well, that's all for this week's program. We will see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.